Hey, good morning out there. It's Fritz Berger, June 5th, 2020, bloodandfaith.com. I've got a very unstructured little thing I want to talk to you about, but it's called sustainability. Sustainability is the ability to keep going, and that's kind of important. It's important for a human life, a personal life, a family, a business. It's important for a country. It's important for cities. And you've probably heard about sustainable agriculture. There's a guy that does permaculture, and he says the way you sustain your land is you grow all kinds of things on it, and you have a whole mixture of plants and animals on it, and they are mutually reinforcing. They're not mutually destructive. They aid each other. They don't tear each other apart. And modern agriculture is where you take a piece of land, you destroy the piece of land, you denude it, and then you put some kind of very specific seed, a monocrop, and then you add all kinds of chemicals to it. And over time, it destroys the soil, destroys the groundwater, and it destroys the seed line, because then you start using these genetically modified seeds, and there's no relationship between the seed and the land and the culture. And culture, I mean the natural environment, not necessarily the human culture. And it all becomes fake, and it's non-sustainable, because over time, unless you keep adding these external factors, it's going to collapse. And when you run out of groundwater, it's going to collapse. And if you run out of oil, it's going to collapse. And a permaculture organization is you have a mix of things that are mutually reinforcing. So as we watch our society collapse, I am saying that, you know, we don't have to, I don't have to get involved to help it collapse. Lord knows that's not the case. If anything, I'm helping sustain it by just participating in the system. And it will collapse under its own weight because it's not sustainable. There's a guy named Jim Kunstler, and I'm going to throw a screenshot up here on her, but he talks about the non-sustainability of large urban areas. And his premise is it's because of oil. Without oil, you can't move people into the city and out of the city. You can't move food into the city, and you can't move garbage out of the city. Unless you have a lot of cheap oil, cities cease to be sustainable. They will collapse from disease and the inability to feed people. Was it in the United States, you've got 94% of the people have nothing to do with farming and producing their own food. The theory is that over the long run, that's completely unsustainable. Cities are the same way. So there's an insustainability on that matter, but there's lots of non-sustainabilities. What's the word again? It's unsustainable. Let me give you another example. So I work in a corporate environment, and you know how corporate environments are. Everything is everything's about EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And this is where you can't discriminate based on the protected categories: race, religion, sex, gender, identity, whatever it is, religion. And this morality is promoted every single day in everything we do. If you go to a leadership class, it's an EEO class. If you go to some sort of enrichment class, it's an EEO class. If you go to a management meeting, you're going to get the EEO lecture. And so it's ingrained in us. Whether you're in Fortune 500 or the academic world, you are told that you will abide by these rules. This is the morality. This is the new morality. And there's zero tolerance for deviation from that. You will be immediately reprimanded and potentially lose your job. So as a result, everybody walks around on pins and needles if you're not in a protected category. And even if you are in a protected category now, as I have noticed, because that little bat swings in every direction. And some people wear that club on their hip and are quite proud of it, and they're happy to fling it just for the intimidation factor. And I've seen that happen. And so you're building a culture of this multicultural diversity where everybody supposedly gets along, but we've created a moral and speech climate where the tension rises every day. People are high strung. People are high strung. They're afraid to say anything, and then they're afraid not to say anything. I got a great example. My wife was telling me about it. There was a person of Mexican descent in a Mexican restaurant, and she couldn't get into the restaurant. This was in Mexico, by the way, because the people at the door were hassling her because I guess she looked like a maid for whatever reason. I don't know why. But her angst was not towards the people that worked in the restaurant. It was toward her white friends who didn't stand up, go over to the doorman, and say, hey, let her in. She's with us. She was very upset about this, and she made it public. She publicized her angst. And, you know, I told my wife, I said, I wouldn't go get help her either. I said, because as soon as I go over and help her, she's going to file an EEO complaint because I'm presuming that she is a minority woman that can't help herself, and I'm a white man that's going to impose my white patriarchal power and privilege to help the person of a lesser status. And that's a slight, and that's an EEO violation. And even if she didn't, why do I have to think about those things? The fact that I'm even thinking about that tells me there's something wrong. That's just weird. Somebody asked me to write something the other day for somebody who was having a good thing happen in their life. And, you know, it's just sort of a personal reflection. And I'm thinking about this, and he said, yeah, I can write out a couple words. And then I start writing out a couple words, and I was like, I don't know what to say. Because what I wanted to write was, in my mind, very complimentary. And it was a wonderful thing. It was a beautiful thing. It was a reflection of their personal identity and their engagement with their culture. And that I think brought life to me and other people. But I said, wait a minute. This person can turn around and accuse me of bias because I'm referring to something that is very common and proper, very common and popular in their culture. Like, I can't write this. And so I wrote something extraordinarily bland. Nice, but extremely bland. And, you know, that's a terrible thing. How is that sustainable? How is that sustainable when everybody walks around on pins and needles wondering whether or not they can or should say something? And I think in the long run, I don't think it's even the long run. I think we've gotten to the place where we can't do it anymore. Sooner or later, people explode. And then, but they want more. They want more and more. I was in a conversation the other day, and somebody says, you know, we gotta deal with this systemic racism. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'm sure they have a whole agenda on what they want to talk about. The nearest I can come up with is they want to feel the way they want to feel, and they want to get what they want to get. And if they don't feel the way they want to feel, and if they don't get what they want to get, it's because of systemic racism. Structural racism. And there will be no end to this. It's not sustainable. What structure? You want to tear down the structure and put what in its place? How do you define racism? It's how you feel on any given day. And that's racist because you feel like you think somebody thought something. Got another example. This is public. It's not, I don't know the parties involved, but this person made it public. Sounds like it's of course I'm going to be sexist and racist by even saying this, but a beautiful young black woman, as she described herself, successful, highly educated, intelligent, speaks a number of languages, got a great job in a very prestigious organization. And she went along and she started documenting all the perceived slights she had received. And all these perceived slights, nobody ever touched her and nobody ever called her, you know, some kind of a slur, ever. But she complained about how she thought that other people were thinking about her. And it was this kind of nonsense. And then she says, well, you know, this organization I work for is guilty of, you know, whatever, structural, you know, racism or discrimination or whatever the phrase is. And but when you read how she describes herself, you just like, you know what, you're one of the luckiest persons alive. And you obviously are doing very, very well. And, you know, what do you want? And I guess this goes to the point, this isn't sustainable. They don't even know what they want, but they want to feel the way they want to feel, and they want to get what they want to get. And if they can't, it's because of systemic racism. And I don't think that's sustainable. And then people walk around on pins and needles because they neither know what to say, nor do they know what not to say. And somebody, you know, chimed in on this discussion. She had enough boldness to say, well, kind of pointing this out. And man, holy hell rained down on her. She just got slammed by all the morally self-righteous people who were going to stand up to defend this black woman that apparently can't defend herself. At least that's what all these liberal white people apparently presume, because they had to chime in and dogpile on somebody that dared to offer an honest opinion. And so this is why, you know, when people get together and they're talking about the riots or the stuff that's going on right now in the United States, and they claim to want a dialogue, it's nonsense. That's a complete and utter lie. They don't want a dialogue. They want a monologue. They want to tell you what to think, and they want to tell you how to think, and God help you if you dare dissent from that. And that's not dissent. That's not viable in the long run either. And then you've got the Van Jones of the world at CNN who say racism is inherent in white people. And then CNN had another guy on there recently. I'll throw up a link to this. And basically saying we need to brainwash young white people and tell them how horrible they are and that they're guilty of these social sins. And these kids, you know, I don't know, 5 years old. And they think that's perfectly acceptable. So at what point does this not work? The police forces, there's a number of cities saying we need to get rid of the police forces. I'm like, fine, get rid of them. Get rid of the police forces. Have your own militias. Have your own race-based militias. This is what the Black Panthers want. They want their own race-based armed militia to defend their black people. Go for it. But again, this is not... this is a sign of the non-sustainability of the culture that we've built. It's not sustainable. And now you've got an enormous amount of resentment being built up in the white people because they're tired of getting all the problems dumped on them. Their ancestors built a beautiful country. And yet you can't even say that because that's racist now too. And, you know, it's not sustainable. There is no point at which it's going to be okay. That's been made very, very clear. And should the forces of the left take power now, as they're urgently trying to get Donald Trump out of office, legally or illegally, they don't care. They've made that really clear with the Russia investigations, and certainly these riots are part of it. You can see it. It's just creeping out all over the place. And you've got, you know, rhinos too, the Republicans, and they've got no support for him, which means they won't support me as a citizen of the United States. We can vote what we want to vote, but they're going to do their own darn thing. And you know, you think black people have a grudge against the system. Well, now white people do because we're realizing that it doesn't matter what we vote. Doesn't matter what we say. They're not going to give us what we voted for if we have any participation in our own society. And we're told, oh, we can't have an opinion because we're white, essentially. But if you have an opinion that agrees with them, well, then that's okay. But we can't stand up for our own self-interest. And even political dissent, even having an opinion that is different from them is you know, it's hard to do. I'm going to show you a few websites that have simply been taken down because they violated the terms of service, whatever that means. you know, these were a couple of sites that I'm familiar with. I've gone to them and enjoyed their content. But they violated the terms of service. Now, in all fairness, you know, WordPress also took down an Antifa site. But why are you taking down an Antifa site? Let them have their own darn site. I don't care if they said something offensive. Let them say something offensive. Now you're going to take this EEO stuff and you're going to put it on our political discussions out there? And apparently that's the answer. No, nobody can have an opinion, even a private opinion that has nothing to do with an employer, in the public sphere. And we're going to crush it. And, you know, everybody says, well, they can do it because it's a private company. So that's where I go back and I say, okay, let's go look at the lunch counter riots in, you know, back east in 1960, where these black folks, they decided they want to eat at the white lunch counter. So they go into a Walgreens, 1960, back on the East Coast somewhere, and they sat down. I said, we want to eat lunch. We want to be served, and we want to eat lunch here. The private company said, oh, what the hell you are? You get out of here. You're trespassing. You're not welcome here. You need to leave. And they said, no, we're not leaving. So the police came and arrested them for trespassing. Said, you can't be here. You're not welcome here. You're trespassing. And to this day, it's a religious icon. It's like you know, a martyrdom, and you bow down and you worship around these heroes that, you know, got arrested in order to advance black rights or whatever it is. But I guarantee you, it's really easy to set up a lunch counter. You get a grill, you get a couple tables, you get a few seats, boom, you got one. And there's lunch counters all over the place. There were lunch counters all over the place back then. People want to make money, and a lot of people don't care, black, white, whatever. But, you know, some lunch counters said, we're only going to serve whites. Well, you can't do that. That's discrimination. So here we are, fast forward 2020. You've got people that have opinions that are different than the left wing of the Democrat Party, and they want to have their opinions out there, and they're told by these private companies, you can't have that opinion. You can't eat at our lunch counter. You can't eat at our lunch counter because you got the wrong opinion. So we're going to shut down your site. We don't care how much money you've spent building that site. We don't care how many years of your life you've poured into that site. We're going to tear it down, and we're not going to tell you why. All we're going to say is you violated your terms of service. And the response has been, it's private business, man. They can do whatever they want. But how many Facebooks are there? How many Googles are there? How many Twitters are there? How many YouTubes are there? They're big monopolies. They're huge, gigantic monopolies, and they're supported by taxpayer dollars. Billions and billions of dollars flow from the federal government into Google for what they do and what they've done. And Google owns YouTube. But everybody said, well, it's a private company. They can do whatever they want. Amazon does the same thing. Men publish books, and Amazon said, you can't even sell your book here because it has ideas that we don't approve of. Amazon's got billions of dollars of contracts with the government, too. And so you're going, okay, my vote doesn't matter. We walk on pins and needles everywhere we go because we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. If I open the door for them, I'm being sexist. If I don't open the door for them, I'm being racist. And, you know, so people are on pins and needles. I think I told you that a while back I went to a dinner. And, yeah, I already told you that story. But that's the way it is. That's the way it is. And that's not sustainable. That's not humanity. That's not a human life. That's not normal. You can't get people so strung up and high strung that they snap. And people are starting to snap in the workplace. And it ain't, you know, it's a lot of people. And it's probably not yours truly. But I've seen these other people, man. They whip out that club and start swinging that EEO club, and you better get out of their way. And people are terrified, and people get out of their way. And that's not sustainable. That's not healthy. And so, you know, as this thing collapses, you don't want to rebuild with that stuff in there. Here's another website, and it talks about all the scientific studies, scores of them, that have looked at what the mixing of different peoples does to whether it's education or dating or safety or business or health. And the conclusions are, it's not good. It's not good. We're not seeing all these positive results from this multiculturalism that we claimed that there would be. It's just not there. And, you know, I said this the other day, too. I said, as this falls apart, you go back to the baseline of actually what works. And, you know, I said before, from now on, you're not going to find a white man that's going to arrest a black man. It's not going to happen. It's very dangerous for them to do. Whether that's the policy or not, police officers are just going to say, you know what, it ain't worth it. I'm going to walk away. And you see that in Europe now with the no-go zones. The police stay out of the Muslim areas of Paris. Same in Germany, same in Sweden, same in England. They just won't go. They're like, we ain't going in there. We'll get killed. And, you know, the black community is saying, you know what, we'll police our own. We'll get our own black people to police black people. Good on them. That's sustainable. Now, of course, that's going to mean that if you're not black, it's going to undermine the multicultural paradise that these social communists have tried to build, because it is unsustainable. And the great experiment now in the atheistic West is to impose the cultural Marxism in place of an economic Marxism. And then the economic Marxism will roll right back, because when they say structural racism, they're also talking about economic outcomes. So if you don't have exact equality of the number of, you know, non-straight white males in positions, or income equality with them all, they're going to say that's structural racism and it has to be abolished and torn down and rebuilt. Well, then you get right back to the classic economic Marxism. So yeah, it's not sustainable. We've built a system over the last century that's unsustainable, and it's starting to crack. The foundations are cracking. You know, peak feminism, forget peak oil, it's peak feminism. Peak feminism is here. It's not the women that are going to rise up and save the black men from getting murdered by the white man. It's going to be strong, young, black males armed with guns that are going to protect their communities. And that's the natural order. And there's everything appropriate with that. So there's the unsustainability. So as we rebuild Christian nation states, you're going to have to reject all this EEO stuff. You're going to have to say, you know what, that didn't work. We tried that. And you're going to have to go with what the Bible teaches. And what the Bible teaches is everything that you don't want to hear about. It teaches patriarchy. It teaches that sustainability comes when like people live with like people. That's what God did at Babel. He said, nope, you're not going to have Babel. You're not going to be mixed. I'm going to spread you out by bloodline all across the face of the earth, and you go build your own place in your own territory. Geographic sanctity is important in this, too. If you look at the history of the sons of Jacob, called Israel, you will see that God said, this is your boundary. This is your land, and this is the boundary to your land. It goes from here to here to here to here. And within that land, within that boundary, each tribe will have their own boundaries. And you don't cross those boundaries. You're going to stay where you need to stay. Well, how about that for, refugee status? Didn't want that. And God didn't say go into the land and mix and intermarry with everybody and be accepting to their gods and their traditions and religions. He said, nope, go in there and wipe them out. Cleanse it. And then you serve me in this land with your people and your blood. And you have your boundaries for your country and your boundaries for your tribe. That's pretty different than the open border society we have today. And it's no surprise. I mean, at the end of the day, the Christian has to realize that the goal is not to find our place in a neutral world. That's been the lie from the left for a long, long time now, probably since the Enlightenment, that we're enlightened human beings and religion is just a little flavoring that we ought to add on to help us get through life. And, you know, we'll be open and accepting to all people. Sure you will, just like the Roman Empire was, and until the Christians said, Caesar's not our Lord, it's Jesus Christ. And they burned him or threw him to the lions. Just like in the book of Daniel, you had the empire, and the empire said, y'all can do your own thing, speak your own languages, serve your own gods, but here's the limits. And a few people said, no, I don't recognize a limit on that. And Daniel was thrown to the lions. Capital punishment, because he kept praying to God. And the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they said, all you got to do is, man, go to the park and, you know, salute or bow down or whatever towards this obelisk. They said, we're not doing it. And so they threw him into the fiery furnace. Now you say, well, you know, it's not that extreme today. And I disagree. I think it is. I think what we're expected to do, what we're not expected to do, are just as outrageous. And I've talked about those things. And so it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable for a Christian to live this way. And so what do we do? Where do we go? Well, we build our own nation states. We say, you know what? This doesn't work. Never has worked. We've gone along. We've tried the compromise route. And as a result, we're being overrun and we're being destroyed. Same as the sons of Israel in the Promised Land. Overrun, destroyed. They wouldn't deal with the issues they had in their country. They thought they could all get along and be one big happy family, and it wasn't the case. What happened is foreign peoples came in and ruled over them, ruled over those peoples, and that's the story to us as Christians. You've got you've got the atheists ruling over us essentially, and they've rebelled against God, and you know the situation is bad, and so the Christians are going to have to go back and say, no, we're not doing this anymore, even no matter who they are. Certainly in the history under the Judges, they had the same problem. You had a guy named Gideon who said, you know, God, you know, we're under oppression from all these horrible people and these horrible religions and these outsiders. And God said, okay, well, first thing you're going to do is you're going to go down and you're going to burn your own father's idol. And he's like, wow, I was talking about those guys. And God said, no, you're going to start right there. And so he went and he tore down his own father's idol. And his fellow Hebrews said, we're going to kill you. We are going to kill you, physically kill you. So he had to go to his own people before he could even start fighting, you know, the external enemy. And Christians, you're in the same spot, man. You're in the same spot. You white Christians, you're going to have to man up and decide what's important to you. You know, what kind of life do you want to leave to your kids and your grandkids? And you're going to have to fight the internal enemy as well as the external enemy. And it's going to be brutal. It's going to be bad. It's going to be tough. But, you know, that's the course of history. The structural racism that they're complaining about, they don't have to worry about that because the structure is collapsing. But I guarantee you what's coming is a whole lot worse for them. It's going to be way worse. And it's going to go back to a more natural and sustainable order. It'll violate every one of their sacred little credos. It'll violate all their social justice warrior moralities. But it will be a sustainable society because what we have now isn't. All right. I think that's enough for this afternoon. See you. Bye. Okay, folks. I got a little follow-up to that. Perhaps I was too optimistic. I said that, you know, the good news is that things are going to get better from our perspective, but that's not guaranteed. What they want is what every Marxist movement has always wanted and that has achieved when they win power. They want the dictatorship of the proletariat. And the proletariat is those were the working people in, you know, Europe in the 1800s, and they were called the proletariat. Supposedly, they're gonna be the dictators on their behalf, and this is how it works in all the communist societies. Fidel Castro, he's for the people, Lenin for the people, Stalin for the people, Mao for the people, Pol Pot for the people. And what they do is they throw people up against the wall and they shoot them. And if you dissent, you're thrown in a gulag or you're shot. and you're starved and you're kicked out of your job and you're going to lose your university privileges, and so is your family. And it's brutal because they don't, there is no limits. There is no limits on power. Their moral goal is to crush the evils of society by any means necessary. And it's language they use openly today. By any means necessary, they're going to crush the evils of society. And the evils of society are the white Christian. Guys, it's been that way for a long, long time. I sat through my PhD course, and I had university professors, tenured professors, look me in the eye, look at all of the eye. He says, the reason for the problems in the world today is the white Christian Europeans. Period. End of story. End of story. Now, can you imagine somebody walking in a room and looking at a bunch of black people and saying, the reason for all the crime in the city is because of black people? Imagine the fireworks and fun they'd have then. But this is what's taught. And so they have a deep desire to destroy white Christian culture. I don't care if you like that statement or not. It is true. And you don't have to dig too far to find it. And I'm not being conspiratorial. In the Bible, you read about the people that stood up and they fought. They stood up and they said, you know what, this is wrong. We're going to fight for our God. We're going to fight for our people. And we're not going to let this happen anymore. We're going to throw off the chains of tyranny. And we're going to do something different. What you don't read about in the Bible is the people that didn't stand up to fight. You don't read about the guy that God called and he didn't stand up to fight. Where were all the men when Israel fell into oppression and slavery? Where were those men? Where were the men when the Philistines came in and took over? There's a reason that we are in the place we are today. It's because some men of some generation did not stand up. And that terrifies me. It terrifies me because I don't want to be that guy. That terrifies me. And I hope it terrifies a lot of white Christian men. Because now's the time. Now is the time. And if we don't, the end will be ugly. It's repeatable in history when the Marxists take over. And they may not call themselves a Marxist, but it's the same totalitarian spirit. And so think deeply about this. I'm optimistic because I know what I've been called to do. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to build Christian nation states. That's what I'm going to do. That's what my life is all about. And I'm not going to stop. I will never stop doing that. I will teach and I will preach till the day I die on that. And I will fight for it. And so, you know, I wouldn't be called to do this if that wasn't God's plan. And to me, it's very exciting. But it doesn't happen with one man. It takes millions of us. And that's where I say, time to rise up, folks. I had to get the little clip from that one guy. Man, I got to get this clip. He says, you know what? One of these days, these white folk are going to rise up. And he says, you know what? I'm going to join them. I'll get that. You'll enjoy that. But that's it for now. Fritz Berggren, bloodandfaith.com, 5 June 2020, the year of our Lord.